Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Welcome to Suffolk Matters, where all of Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News, opinions, and insights you won't hear anywhere else. Here's your host, the president of New York's largest independent union, Suffolk AME's Dan Leveler.
Welcome to another edition of Suffolk Matters on Walk 97.5 and 94.3 The Shark, where Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News and views you can't hear anywhere else.
So my guest this morning is Ryan Fisher. He's a Suffolk AME member and a fire marshal at Fire Rescue Emergency Services. Ryan, thank you for coming in today to talk with us.
All right. It's a pleasure to be here. An honor. Thank you.
Yeah. So, first and foremost, I say that you are a fire marshal. And what is that, right? Like, I mean, I know an answer, but we want the people listening to understand exactly what it is a fire marshal does before we get into the specifics of the canine side of things.
Right. So, specifically, as a Suffolk County fire marshal, we're responsible for the inspection fire and life safety for all the county-owned facilities, lease facilities, as well as we do response for hazardous materials. We do oversee the Urban Search and Rescue Team program, and of course, now we have another accelerant detection canine in the county, and we assist the arson detectives, the East End fire marshals and detectives. Overarching fire marshals' jobs is safety, education, fire investigation, and really investigating the causes and determinations of fires.
Sure, and one of the main things we want to focus on today is the dog you have with you, Chuck.
Yeah.
Who is 17 months old and is an English lab. It's interesting when you say, you're doing these investigations. There are, I guess, common accelerants that people use in order to commit arson, right? It's not a natural fire. Somebody deliberately set fire. And we as humans, we're able to detect certain things very easily because that's how we work. And Chuck is able to do very specialized things as well. So let's get into a little bit about Chuck, the work he does, because essentially he's a working dog. He's on shift and he's off shift. And when he's working, he's in work mode. And when he's off, he's just a dog.
Absolutely. He's technically an ignitable liquid detection canine. It's a mouthful. So we say accelerant. They used to be called arson canines, but because the connotation of labeling something arson, even though arson's a crime, what he's doing is he's not saying that it's a crime. He's saying it is. He's going to prove that there's some sort of ignitable liquid, and he's a tool in toolbox for the fire investigator, sure. Just like our observations are. Things like cameras that we'll use to investigate a fire to look for evidence. But what we'll take is what he can do is he's trained and imprinted on 6 categories of ignitable liquids.
Mm-hmm.
And I can go into all of that, but it's kind of sciencey stuff and nobody really wants to know about that. But it's 6 different categories. And when he goes out and I give him a command, he will search for those ignitable liquids. It's trace amounts too. So
sure.
He's down to 20. So for certain odors, goes down to 20 microliters, which
wow.
is about half of a drop.
Right.
So he can sniff a half of a drop. And if I were to do, let's say, an open area search, these are different disciplines.
Sure.
And if I were to do an open area search, I can take a popsicle stick, put that drop on there and mm-hmm. set it out. And from 150, 200 yards away, he'll be able to smell it and track it.
He'll find it. Yeah.
And so what they do is once our arson detectives or whoever the lead investigator is requests us and we do a search, we'll run the whole search of the area. And if he comes up with something, we send it to our partners in the crime lab. And they have special chemists that work on just fire debris. And they'll validate whether or not there's something there, what it is. And then the fire investigator will take all of that, put it into their report. And if there is potential,
as evidence.
Present it as evidence. And if there's a crime committed, then they'll prosecute it and go from there.
Very interesting. You know, part of what you said was that he would be able to prove that these liquids were in place, and so that immediately sparked my curiosity. Okay, so the dog can't go to court and prove it, but now I think I have a more complete understanding, which is, you know, the dog will go out, be given a command to look for certain substances. If they exist, they'll identify them, and then you'll be able to mark the area and have chemists then verify for court documents if necessary.
I say prove. I shouldn't have said prove. I trust him enough
right.
to know that if he's sitting on something, he's
right.
on to some sort of an odor. But yes, any sample that we've collected or any alert that he's given has to be by the NFPA 921 standard, which is our Bible, so to speak, and
right.
what tells us exactly how we're supposed to do fire investigations. It has to be seen by a lab, and the lab has to certify it. We have some great chemists over in the Suffolk County Crime.
Sure. Lab. I, again, AME members as well, and they do a lot of work, and they do a great job. I mean, the workload I have seen increase out of the medical examiner's office. I mean, there aren't more people working at the medical examiner's, but there are more things going on. Obviously, COVID just happened, so there was a great influx of tragic work that had to be done throughout that whole process. But I don't know that I disagree with your using the word prove in the initial steps, because if Chuck couldn't find something in the field, then there's nothing for the crime lab to analyze. So he is step one. He finds the stuff that you can then flag, and then our partners at the medical examiners verify that information and get that into a report. So that's actually great. And listen, you have done a bunch with the canine training in the first place, and I want to get into a little bit about you and what that all means. But it's the ATF National Canine Division training that you've done, and I believe it was about 6 weeks you spent in.
Yes, yeah. It was 6 weeks, start to finish. A couple of days in the classroom, just going over basic, first aid mostly for the dog and how these dogs work and the program and how the history of it. And after those 3 days, we were partnered up, and that was it. We spent a couple of days just working together, and he stayed in the kennel. I went back to a hotel, and then after about 3-4 days of that, he was in a hotel with me for about 5 weeks. And then after that, comes home. So we've been together and living with each other for
yes.
a few months now.
And so I guess that's an important point here. So Chuck is with you at all times, right? So at work, Chuck is with you, and then Chuck goes home with you. And that's why I was saying earlier, he's on shift. He's a working dog. He mm-hmm. has his job to do every day, just like you do. And then when he's off shift, he gets to be. Do you find that there's a difference in his personality when working versus being at home?
Yeah, absolutely. When he's done at the end of the day, we actually have a separate collar for him. So right mm-hmm. now he has an ATF detection canine collar mm-hmm. on it. But when we go home and my daughter, she comes up, she'll sit him down. She takes off one collar. And then, he goes right to his bed, grabs his bone. He has a bone, picks it up. He'll chew it. And he lays down, and it's pretty funny. He'll lay down and he'll relax and chew his bone for a little while, just and decompress for the day.
Yeah, yeah, and so it's not so different than human beings. You get off your shift and you just need a moment to kind of unwind
yep.
Before you deal with the rest of the day. So I think that's pretty cool. Let's talk about the types of the skills that you acquired and the skills that Chuck needed to develop as part of this programming. Again, 6 weeks of working together. What was that process like?
Right. So what I'm looking for is, like I said, in their imprinting process, they're trained to alert to the ignitable liquid. And when I say alert, they sit. So he'll go, he'll smell something, he'll sit. And then what he'll do is he's automatically going to look at me and see if I have any reaction, at which point I have to tell him, I'll give him a command and I'll feed him out. But what I'm looking for is a noticeable change in behavior. It's more in the search than the actual find.
Right.
And that's what we're looking for. If he's being distracted by maybe something like food or a sound or something like that, and he will pull me towards wherever it is that he's searching for.
Right.
And if he's searching for an odor or something else, because they, like any other dog, they will search for animal odors. They will search for food odors if, you know, we don't work to train them off of them. So it's noticing his notice. It's recognizing his change in behavior,
right,
and saying, you know, is what he's doing leading up to his alert valid, or is it just him being distracted?
Being a natural dog.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, at that point, when we're actually working in the field and we're searching through a fire, you know, there's a phrase is trust your dog. And that's something that the ATF really drives home is trust your dog if he's sitting there. And I do.
Mm-hmm.
If he sits, I know there's something there.
Oh, it's awesome. And, I think, you know, folks listening to this and getting an inside peek at this, you can realize that you're saving the taxpayers a ton of time and a ton of money. To try and do this in another way would be very time-consuming, cost-prohibitive, whatever else, and the integration of a dog into what it is the fire marshals do for Suffolk County, that's a huge help.
Yeah, absolutely. They've tried to use electronic sniffers and things of that nature to do what the dog does, mm-hmm. and there's nothing out there that's comparable. And it does cut down on the amount of evidence that's collected. And fire debris is pretty unique that it takes about 6 to 8 hours to process per sample.
Mm-hmm.
So if you come in from a fire scene with, you know, 10 cans, you're talking about hundreds of hours of testing that our lab would have to do that they can't be doing other things. So to bring the dog in and be like, he alerted on it, more often than not, the lab's going to look at that and they're going to go, okay, we're probably pretty certain that he's accurate. So we're going to test these samples right away.
Right.
So it helps with keeping their workload down. It helps our investigators with getting their prosecutions moving along. So it's definitely a money saver in the long run. And there is no cost to the county to actually get him, train him, other than my salary.
Right, And you're doing the job anyway. So it's actually cutting down on the amount of time that you would be spending, you know, on a particular site working this issue before you could get to the next thing, your next set of responsibilities. Having Chuck involved means you can get the job done that much faster. So I think on every level, it's just basically a process improvement that's good for people. Do you and Chuck work with outside agencies as well? Is it all just county related, or do you?
So we're available. A part of our the county's agreement with the ATF is we need to remain available for, you know, anybody who requests an accelerant detection canine. Right now, our primary is obviously going to be the Suffolk County Police with their arson squad.
Sure.
But the East End, all the East End towns and their investigation agencies, whether it's fire marshals or the police. Actually, we just got requested for a mutual aid to Nassau County.
Mm-hmm.
Nassau County does have two of the same trained ATF dogs. Unfortunately, one handler was sick and the other one was unavailable. So they called, put a request out to us, and without hesitation, the two of us drove out to Baldwin and assisted them with a fire out there. And then part of the agreement as well is the through the ATF. So if the ATF requests an accelerant dog and I happen to be in the area, we can need to respond to them to help them out.
Yeah. And ATF, what does that stand for?
Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms.
There you go. So and federal.
There's a little
agency.
Known. There's an additional E at the end, but they don't really ever include it, which is explosives. But
right.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, which he still belongs to.
Mm-hmm.
They own the rights to him.
Mm-hmm.
So if at any point, for whatever reason, they can come take him back, but I won't allow that to happen. but until he's retired, you know, he's responsible, and the county's responsible for the next 5 years with him as a contractor.
Sure. Sure. And, you know, speaking of retirement, you know, when Chuck retires, does he retire back to ATF or he retires with you?
He could go back to them. We obviously, I don't think any handler has ever not brought their dog back. And when they do retire, the ATF does give us the first opportunity. What they won't allow is, let's say, him to retire to somebody else. You can't transfer ownership. So either he stays with me as a handler or he goes back to the ATF.
Gotcha.
And then they'll, if there is somebody in mind that I think would be a good, you know, person to have, then I can make that recommendation.
Gotcha.
Because it is because of the cost too. There's a big cost associated with him. Any of the dogs that don't make the cut through their programs that they get through the breeders, it's about a $6,000 dog. Just untrained $6,000.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he had a previous career through the Puppies Behind Bars program.
Right. So yeah. So that's what I was gonna start getting into that was. So yes, he is raised through a program called Puppies Behind Bars. They're based out of New York City. The ATF does have different vendors that they go through to get canines. Guiding Eyes for the Blind, the Guide Dog Foundation right here on Long Island, as well as Carolina Canine. But the Puppies Behind Bars is one of the larger breeders that they use, and it's pretty unique. They use canine raising and training as a method to assist incarcerated individuals with
rehabilitation
and reduce recidivism because it gives them a skill. It gives them a focus, more than just a job. And I mean, who doesn't like taking care of an animal,
right?
A puppy, you know? So it's pretty cool. So after the first couple of weeks being at home with a breeder, they're handed off to a prison.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in Edma Mahan in New Jersey, I believe it was, with a puppy raiser, an incarcerated individual. Her name was Aisha.
Mm-hmm.
She actually writes, part of her responsibility is to write a journal entry. So I have all the information, commands that he's learned, when he lost his teeth, if he ever got hurt, if anything ever happened, pictures, photos of him. And then while they're in that program on the weekends, they go out to people's houses, volunteers in the area that take them out to their homes, to the schools, stores, all sorts of things, expose them to as much as possible. He's been to Manhattan. He's been all over the place. He's been swimming in the ocean and lakes. He's well versed, and that's why he's so well behaved. But the program itself is it's incredible.
It's special. Again, it's just another example of, you know, over the lifetime of Chuck specifically, you know, the lives he's going to touch, the way he's going to end up helping society. You know, a lot of people think of dogs as a pet. You know, they're in your house. You feed them. You clean up after them. You know. Get them checked out at the vet when they need to, you know, all of that stuff. But, you know, Chuck is in a very real sense changing lives, you know, helping in the jails, and it, you know, gets to see the world, right? You know, swimming in lakes, swimming in the oceans, going to Manhattan, you know, this is a better life than some dogs. You know, some dogs are, you know, they've got their house, they've got their yard, and that's that. So that's pretty interesting. Let's also talk a little bit, you know, you kind of opened the door to it a little bit earlier, you know, when you talked about coming home from work and him, you know, grabbing his bone and taking a little rest and decompressing. But what's home life like for Chuck?
So just like any other dogs out there, I mean, I don't consider him a pet. He's not considered a pet because he does go to work. He's my partner.
Yeah.
When he goes home, we change the collar off. He plays with my kids. I have a daughter that's 6 years old and a son that's about to be 3. And they go outside. They play with him. He plays with them. But we do train 7 days a week. So even when we're at home on the weekends, we go out and we have to train in the driveway, or, you know, we'll go maybe to a local park and train him up for, you know, probably a half hour, 45 minutes. But my daughter helps.
Right.
My son, not so much.
Yeah.
But my daughter's out there and she'll help. She takes care of him. And it's a great time. You know, he's a pleasure to have in the house. He's very well behaved. I think I've only heard him bark maybe about 5 times.
Wow.
But he's a really, really, really good dog to have around the house.
That's great. I guess another question I could ask, right? So he's in everyday life, right? So, you know, he's off shift. He's at the house with you, or he's going out into the world and the whole nine, and you're going to pick up the sense of accelerants that aren't being looked for. Does he react?
Yes and no. He knows they're there and he smells them, but because he's not being given any command to search at that particular time, he knows he's not going to get fed, so he just kind of stays off.
Doesn't bother.
Yeah, so he'll smell it. He might sniff around, and that was one of those things that even in the beginning, you know, I took him outside and I was doing some yard work and I had a gas can out and I didn't think about it. He walks up to it and he's sniffing around like crazy. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, man. So for the most part, you know, I try and limit it. I don't want to tempt him with anything. But when he's not working, he's not searching people. He's not searching you. I mean, a lot of people make that joke, like, oh, what are you, you know, lighting fires? Like, no, he's not searching. He's just sniffing because he's sniffing anything else, like whatever you just ate, your lotion on your hands, you know, you pet another dog, he's sniffing the same things.
Yep.
There's a distinct difference between how he searches for an accelerant and when he's just sniffing.
And that's, I guess, that behavioral pattern you were talking about. You could tell you know, the stance of the dog was probably changed a little.
Right. So, I mean, if you can, I'll explain it real quick. Yeah. So they're incredible. I mean, everybody knows that dogs can smell better than humans can, but it's a factor of millions that they can smell better than we can. And which even more so incredible with Labradors and German Shepherds and stuff like that. There's actually two chambers to their nose, and there's an upper chamber where they have their senses and then a bypass where they breathe through. So what he's actually doing is when he's sniffing and really sniffing, he'll take in odor and they hold that air up in their nose. So that's why they can smell things for longer and really dissect those compounds to a degree that we can't even. I mean, we all smell gasoline, but he can smell it in so many different ways, and they can, and they hold that onto it. And then that's how they can go out there and really pinpoint as well, because he can smell variations in how much of that odor and how strong it is far better than we can.
Yeah. So much, much more sensitive, right, but also has a longer period of time to make a determination of what is it I'm smelling, because they have, genetically, they have this advantage
right.
we don't.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's part of the behavior is I can actually smell the difference, or smell, I can hear the difference when he's actually searching, because there's little flaps that'll close inside their nose to keep that air in there. And you can actually hear it. It sounds like his teeth are chattering, but they're not. It's those valves opening.
Wow.
And then they'll do a big blowout right before they get to the odor, and they'll take one more inhale, and they'll check it, and then that's when he'll sit.
Yeah.
So that's that change of behavior that I'm looking for.
Right.
My confidence level shoots up when he does something like that.
It's very interesting. I'm very fascinated by this whole thing. So, but Ryan, I want to ask you a little bit more about yourself. Obviously, you know, you're doing the fire marshal work. You've got the canine. You've done you know, various different presentations in your role as a fire marshal. But it doesn't end there, right? You know, and this is something about AME members that I have found across departments. They aren't just doing their 9-to-5 government job work, and I say 9-to-5. Obviously, the schedules are all over the place, but they find other ways to help the community, and I know you're involved in some other things. So if you would share some other things that you do and have done. And
yeah, so other than being a fire marshal and a dad, I've been a volunteer a firefighter for 17 years now. Started off in the juniors program at 11 years old. The fire department has been my life. It's one of the requirements to actually become a fire marshal. So the fire service has been my life. I did take a brief hiatus and served in the United States Army.
Right.
They got out of that, out of the active duty component of that, went to the National Guard. I ended up doing about 10 years, almost 11, in the United States Army. I love helping people, satisfaction that it brings.
Sure.
And that's what led me to continue on with county service and make a career out of helping people.
Yeah, and you were a former captain, Engine Company 8, is that correct?
So. I was an Engine Company captain. I'm actually finishing up now as time as a Special Operations for a Marine unit. So I've done quite a few things, and I really enjoy it, and it's good for my family. It's and this is just another thing to add that I never knew that I loved, but I love it.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I got to tell you, I have been exposed predominantly in my life to fire service through AME. Folks that I worked with, either at Public Works or now in my role working at the Union Hall and getting to meet so many of our great members and finding out what they do outside of work. And, you know, Tom Moran, our executive vice president, heavily involved in the fire service, but also he gets involved in the drill team races, and that's the that's the stuff that really kind of captivated me at first. It was great to see people, you know, volunteering their time. You know, I mean, fire service first and foremost on Long Island and for most of the state, these are individuals that are on their own time for, you know, no real benefit to themselves, getting together and figuring out how do we properly address when fires happen, you know, and exercises. Like, you show up to the firehouse and you just unroll a bunch of hoses and you roll them back up again, and you know, like little simple trainings down to very complicated stuff and taking all those different classes and working as a unit. But everybody doing this is as volunteerism, and it is a very interesting community. But the drill team, I think, is just an excellent example of the skill set that's there, that, you know, you're basically your neighbors, folks from around your community have gotten so good that, you know, one of the examples, you know, they'll run a truck down super fast down this little runway. slam a ladder down and someone has to run up it as fast as possible. It's competition between the different fire departments and everything else. But the thing that really strikes me is they're doing it to be better at their job. They're doing it to keep you safer, to deal with these issues even better. And then they're working extra hard on top of that just to compete with each other, you know, for the grand prize of, you know, I guess bragging rights. You know, we ran up the ladder the fastest. But it's very interesting. And the whole community, you know, I haven't been to one of these events that wasn't a packed house. It's just it's an interesting world.
Yeah. So the volunteer fire service is a pretty uniquely American thing. I mean, you do see volunteers in, you know, in other parts of the world. But the volunteer service, the fire service in general is very uniquely American. There was other fire service, but the modern fire service that we see today and how it was set up is pretty uniquely American, and which is why it's been able to exist for as long as it has. But we're still looking for more volunteers out there, looking for more people, because especially now people work more jobs. It's getting tougher and tougher, and training requirements are getting more stringent. So it's difficult, but, you know, there's still a lot of people that are very dedicated to it because it is a good thing.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, there's the component of bravery that goes into it. And, you know, as you're coming up through the world, you know, certain folks make that decision in their lives. You know, I'm part of this community. I want to be part of this community, you know, the community in general, not the fire service community. And they seek to find ways to help out. And I think the fire service is a great way to learn valuable life skills. So on the recruitment side, you know, I applaud everybody's efforts and, you know, help wherever we can, obviously, to get more and more folks involved in the fire service, because it is a way to leap your life ahead. You know, in the union movement, but also in the fire service movement, is something that you find that we have in common is there's that secondary education, things that you just don't learn in school, but you learn from experienced folks around the fire department. You learn simple, basic, everyday skills that you need, you know, either whether it's around your home or just, you know, dealing with, you know, day-to-day life, that family is there for you. And, you know, like I say, it exists in the union movement. It exists in the fire service. I certainly encourage anybody out there that's thinking about, you know, how they want to structure their lives and looking at ways to help their community, be part of their community, to look at your local fire service. My guest this morning was Ryan Fisher. Again, Suffolk AME member and fire marshal. He brought Chuck the K-9. We learned a little bit about how we save considerable time and resources by utilizing the unique biology of dogs and training them to find, in this specific case, different types of accelerants and aid in investigations that may be arson-related. But Ryan, I want to thank you. Chuck, I'm thanking you also, even if you can't understand me. All right. But I want to thank you for joining us on behalf of AME. Thank you for everything you and your coworkers do. This, you know, the people in Suffolk County are better off because of it. So
thank you. I appreciate it.
To our listeners, we'll speak to you next week.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.